Into your head.
Show number 71, as signified by the inscription on your MP3 file, which says Into Your Head, show number 71, colon, space, and then there's a title, which I haven't determined yet. There'll be some sort of a title given to this episode of Into Your Head. There always is. Probably call it something like The Moon Cast Sitting on the Roof, or Turkish Trophies. I don't know. It depends what comes up during the show. I'll go through the show notes and I'll find something that stands out and I'll say that'll make a good title. It'll probably be something like Taliban Trophies, or I don't know, Cats in the Kidney Beans Can. You see, I can't make them up on the fly. I'll just have to wait till the end, and then I'll pluck one out of somewhere, and it'll be absolutely fantastic, and you'll be very impressed. You'll be a new listener, as you are. This is probably your first time, and you probably came along and saw in the iTunes store something called Into Your Head, and you saw, that looks good. Show number 71, Taliban Teacups. And you say, I wonder what that's all about. I've got an interest in the Taliban. And I'm an art collector and an antiques collector. In fact, I'm thinking of getting into teacups from that part of the world. So I'll have a listen to this about Taliban teacups. And you're probably very disappointed now. You didn't know you was being tricked. Well, I'm not trying to trick you. It's just that at some point in the show, I talked about something that was vaguely related to teacups in the Taliban. I never said it was going to be an antiques program. There probably are antiques programs somewhere on the... Actually, let's have a look for antiques podcasts. Hang on, I'm on Google here. Antiques podcasts. The internet seems to be down. I don't know what I can do about that. It's not. A weekly podcast featuring Kevin Jackson, antiques expert from the BBC's Bargain Hunt. Well, there you go. And while we're here, I might as well do Taliban teacups. Taliban teacups. There's actually very little. Maybe I should put space between tea and cups. There we go. Three cups of tea, one man's mission to promote peace. And then it goes on, something else about the Taliban. It's a book review. So there you go. There's plenty of Taliban teacup information available on the internet. If there is a market for Taliban teacups, I haven't looked into it, but you can rest assured that there is information about it on there on Google somewhere to be found. If you do a search for Taliban teacups... Now, I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking they don't drink tea in the Taliban. It's against their religion. They're coffee drinkers. Tea is one of the most evil substances known to man. It's basically cannabis. It's a leaf that's grown in the ground. It used to be used to make Coca-Cola in the early days and cornflakes. But that was back before people worried about that sort of thing. Coca-Cola is fine now. It's made from nice, healthy stuff with sugar and the fizzy stuff that they put in. And some sort of black currant. But we talked about that in the previous show. I'm not going to go back on my theory about Coca-Cola being made out of black currant in some countries. You just go back to listen to show 70 if you want to hear about that. Suffice to say, I disapprove immensely of tea. I'm in my kitchen at the moment. And just to illustrate this to myself, just as an aid in this lecture, I'm going to pluck out a box of tea bags from the press. Hang on a minute. Here we go. Now, straight away, I can see your problem. The box is open, but it's upside down. The bottom of the box is being opened. It's almost a packaging equivalent of having 666 branded on the box. And apart from that, you've got a Tesco 40 premium tea bags. Now, they don't look very premium to me. They're being wrapped. It's basically a lump of toilet paper that's been cut into the size of a circle, and then tiny little holes made in it. And somehow they've managed to put the tea leaves in through the holes. So they can't be very strong tea leaves. You have to squash each individual tea bag until it squeezes in through one of the holes. And of course they pay 5 euros to do this in India. And I've seen 5-year-olds go out at night to their second job, which is in a call centre. It's a tea call centre. People ring up with their tea questions. And there's usually some 5-year-old in a school here in Ireland who's being asked to do a project about tea. So he rings up the tea product call centre and he gets through to another 5-year-old and he asks him, I was just wondering, could you tell me how you get the tea leaves into the tea bag? And the 5-year-old in the call centre will say, well, as it happens, I can, because during the day I happen to work in the tea bag factory. It's my job. And in fact, I was wondering what you foreigners do with those things. I thought there were some sort of frisbees, some sort of disposable frisbee that you can flush down the toilet when it's done, or maybe a little bean bag for a pet insect, because I know you foreigners, you like to have your little pet insects. You have pet crickets and pet bats, which technically isn't an insect, but you have those as well. You have pet hamsters, pet gerbils, pet cats, pet dogs. You probably have pet cows as well. But yeah, anyway, about these things that which I now know, thanks to you ringing up from your school in Ireland, I now know that they're tea bags. Why you would want your tea packed in bags, I don't know. Surely you could just put it all in a big box and get a spoon, because you can reuse a spoon. It's much better than having individual packing around each dose of tea. And in my day, back when in my country, when we used to have tea, you used to just inject it into your arm. I remember my father doing that, actually, just before he sent me off to work at the age of 3, and then he disappeared. I don't know what happened to him. I think he went to jail. It was something to do with tea. He was dealing tea on the streets, apparently. And they arrested him. They said, you can't go around dealing tea to people, especially not to adults, because if too many adults in this country get tea, then that means that the manufacturing companies are in trouble, because they've got child labour working, making this tea, and you're only allowed, under the law here, you're only allowed to use child labour for stuff that's being exported. You're not allowed to use child labour to produce products that are to be consumed by adults here in this country. It's a bit like the law in Ireland about poutine. We're allowed to manufacture poutine for export, but not for ourselves, because we don't want to harm ourselves. It's okay to harm other countries, or send them something that might harm them, because they're perfectly capable to put in laws saying you can't import poutine, and that'll sort that out. So there you go. That's a little story about for you about tea and poutine, and it's filled up 7 minutes and 30 seconds of the show. So that's absolutely fantastic. The tea saga continues, really, because I'm still sitting here on the counter in my kitchen. I've been fiddling in the cupboard, and I noticed another product here, and I want to be fair. There's more than one type of tea, and I don't want to tar them all with the same brush. And it turns out I found this other product here. It's from the same company. It's Tesco Finest Green Tea Bags. Now that's excellent. That means it's an environmentally friendly type of tea. It's a completely green. It's being manufactured using, wasting no precious natural resources whatsoever, I assume. Let's see what it says on the label. It says, we are happy to refund or replace any Tesco product which falls below the high standard you expect. Well, that's excellent. That means if I don't like it, I just send it back and they give me another one. It's absolutely fantastic, so I'm going to just keep sending this back right completely through my life until I get satisfaction, or until I die, or either way I'll have free tea bags for the rest of my life. For tea bags for the cost of one box of tea bags, which I've already purchased, and as I continue to replace the tea bags with a new free box, the comparative cost of each box will get lower and lower each time, because of course it's the total price of the first box divided by how many boxes that I end up getting. But we're going back into mathematics again. Let's not do that. But let's take out one of these green tea bags and we'll have a look at it. I'll take out one of the other tea bags that I was talking about earlier and we'll have a look at them. Now straight away I can see a difference. Let's see. Well, I can't, actually. One is in my left hand and one is in my right. Now, maybe that's some sort of a political statement. But strangely enough, the green tea bag is in my right hand, not my left. Right is usually associated with the conservative end of things, and left is with the liberal thing. You'd expect the green bag to be in my left hand, but it's not. So I hope that's not a problem. I'm going to put away the original tea bags before we get confused. I'll put them up beside the chocolate cappuccino and the gold blend coffee and the gold decaf coffee and the gold blend half-calf coffee and the weird foreign caramel coffee that my wife likes to drink. So she got imported for us. All legally, of course. My brother imported them for us, and I assume he paid the correct customs rate on the way through the airport. It's nothing to do with me. It was a gift. There's probably some gift tax that we're supposed to pay on it, but I wasn't informed of this at the time. It's only occurred to me now, but rest assured, on Tuesday, after the bank holiday, I'll go and look into this, and if there's any tax due to be paid on that gift of some tea, I will deny completely that it was a gift at all, and I'll send a bill to my brother. Oh no, I'll get him to send a bill to me, and then it won't be a gift. And then I'll get him to donate the money to some charity that looks after tea bag manufacturers in India. So then everything will be fair and square. It'll be like everything will be have come full circle. It'll be like a modern, advanced, human equivalent of the food circle, except it'll be by design rather than by default. Someone will have designed it, other than a god or a scientist, because I don't like the idea that everything in this world in the natural world has been designed either by a god or a scientist. I don't think scientists should have that much power to go around deciding which animal eats which animal and who evolves into what. You know, if we had a couple of hundred years ago, we had that island with all the monkeys on it, and the scientists did an experiment, and they all evolved into people. But they were faulty people, if you remember. We had an island full of faulty people. I forget where it was. I think it was off the coast of Florida. They got some monkeys and evolved them into faulty people. But I suppose we did all sorts of experiments on them and advanced medicine and science, and we got plenty of new information. So in the end, I suppose you could justify it that way. But still, if in hindsight, it was morally wrong to start the whole thing at all. There was 2,000 monkeys involved in that. The end ended up as very confused people who had monkeys as grandparents, or in some cases parents, if I understood it properly. What was interesting was that they found it very difficult to learn how to ride a bicycle. But everything else was fine. They had a proper intellect. They had some problems with various things. They were afraid of cats, and they were obsessed with climbing trees, of course, but that's to be understood. There's no harm in climbing a tree. Lots of children climb trees, and they wouldn't do them any harm if they were a bit closer to monkeys and they were able to climb trees more safely. They have less chance of falling. It would save us a lot of trouble. In fact, maybe cats should be treated like that as well. Maybe we should get the cat breeders to make sure that each breed of cat is 2% monkey. It wouldn't change the cat very much at all. It would just make it a lot more safe when it's climbing trees. And it would save the fire brigade a fortune, because the fire brigade is the one who's always having to rescue cats from trees. And the cat doesn't want to be rescued, but it doesn't realise that it's not going to get down unless it's rescued. It's going to starve to death, or else eat some poisonous bark off the tree. Now that's if it can get any bark. The bark be my hobby, all covered in ivy, because it's an old tree. But there you go, that's it. Anyway, back to the tea. Yeah, it's green. I can't really see any difference. There's a strength guide that says strength mild, strength medium, strength strong. Your strength should be on the front. So this is strength number one, and so it's mild strength. So these tea bags aren't very strong at all. If I was to pull this apart, now I've just pulled the tea bag apart, which I hadn't intended to do, but I should have in the first place. It'll help in our analysis. I can now see the actual tea leaves. They actually look like compost. They look like grass cuttings that's being semi-rotted into compost, which is fine. That just means it's matured. I'm from the keen gardening family. We used to always put the grass cuttings on a compost heap, and we let it rot, and then we put it back into the ground and use it to use it to fuel the next year's grass crop. Absolutely fantastic. The tea leaves certainly are green. I'm starting to realise now that it's the reason it's called green tea is not necessarily just because of its environmentally friendliness. It's because it looks like crap. So there you go. That's green tea for you. Neil, you spent the whole 14 minutes of the show so far talking about tea, and you're going to probably patter out music or a cat song or something. Well, you're absolutely right there. I'll do a cat song right now, actually. I'll do an a cappella one, because I'm downstairs on my portable recorder. I don't have access to my harmonica or my guitar or my wife, sometimes does a cat song, but she's not in the mood for that lately. Don't worry, she'll be back with cat songs eventually, just not today. In fact, here's a sweeping brush, this might come in useful in some way. I can't imagine how. Maybe if I bang it against the pedal bin, that'll make some sort of a makeshift percussion instrument. In fact, let's try it. I'll get down closer to it, because I don't want to wake anyone up. Now, hopefully you can hear that. That's the percussion instrument that I've made. So here goes. Here's a cat song where a makeshift percussion instrument is backing. Oh, percussion cat, percussion cat, padding your paws along the mat. Percussion cat, percussion cat, pad, 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 you're coming along the ting. Percussion cat, I can hear you coming. Percussion cat, I can hear you coming. I don't mean to be vulgar, or I mean I can hear that you're on your way, because you're padding along the road all the way. There you go. Well, it wasn't great, but as I say, I don't have access to my musical instruments, or to my cat song expert, Joanne, who's not able to provide the cat song at the moment. But well, don't worry, that'll be all. She'll have one for you in future. In fact, we're working on new characters for Joanne. We're going to have an American character who's in the works at the moment, in development, and she's going to be a regular feature. She's going to play this character, and we'll just pretend it's not Joanne. We'll call her by her character's name. Same thing as she's done in the past with the Irish character called what's his face, Tomo O'Brien. We did a character called Tomo O'Brien, played by Joanne, during several episodes. No one understood it because you're all foreigners, because it's an Irish thing. It was a Dublin accent, all Irish related material and humour. So none of you understood it. But that's hardly my fault that you're not Irish. I can't help it. When I go around tourist spots, every single American I meet here who comes to kiss the Blarney Stone comes and says, claims to be Irish. They say, oh, my great-great-grandmother was Irish, therefore I'm Irish, aren't I great? But then when you give them a little Irish character played by your wife in the podcast, they don't understand it. And tell you, that separates the crop from the pigeons when you do that. So that's what we did there. We separated the cat from the pigeon. But it's time to move on now. So Joanne's going to give you a character that you can all understand, even you foreigners who aren't Irish, and even you foreigners who are Irish, because your great-great-great-great-grandmother once went to Cork and bought a white knitted Blarney jumper. Whatever the hell those white knitted jumpers are called. They're not called Blarney jumpers. They're called something else. They're very woolly, and they're white, and they're usually worn by someone who lives on an island and who's never seen another person in his life. Who's never seen a woman or a cat or anything. He's never seen anything except a cow. We used to have people like that in Ireland. They lived on little islands off the west coast. And they're the sort of people you see in folklore and in American movies with leprechauns in them. We don't actually have leprechauns, but yeah, Americans love to put leprechauns in their Irish movies. Because if it keeps you happy, it's fine. We like to put Uncle Sam in our hamburger commercials. We put a guy up saying, I'm Uncle Sam, come and buy this burger. It's only 99 cents tomorrow. And it's a special version of the burger. We've got an extra piece of meat in it, and we've got lettuce, and we've got hot stuff. We've got this new hot sauce that's going to make it hot, because you put the hot sauce in the microwave until it burns us to a crisp, and then we put the sauce in on top, but that makes it really hot. So we call it the hot burger. So if you're into hot stuff, come and buy our hot burger tomorrow. It's for a limited time only. We're only going to sell it until the 28th, or until it runs out, I don't know. Don't come in looking for it at breakfast time, though, because we have a separate breakfast menu. And if you come in and ask for it at breakfast, you'll be like Michael Douglas in that movie Falling Down, where he comes in at 12 o'clock looking for a breakfast. But it's too late, because breakfast is over. So it's the same thing if you do it the other way around. If you come in looking for a hot burger at 8 o'clock in the morning, you're going to get told that it's not available. We're not doing the hot burgers yet. We're doing fake eggs on some sort of thing called a muffin, and we're doing a little a thing that's called sausage, but it's not called a sausage, it's called sausage, because it's basically sausage meat that's being turned into the shape of whatever our latest mascot is. We probably have a sausage in the shape of a bunny's head, and it's served on a cracker with some cheese melted onto it and melted under it. In fact, there's cheese on everything. The fast food industry is highly dependent on cheese. You can't have anything without cheese nowadays, except unless you get the plain fries, the ones that don't have the cheese on them. But they're probably made out of cheese as well. They're made out of reformulated bits of chicken crap and cottage cheese. But it's not being made in a cottage, it's being made in a factory by people who used to by people who probably partake in cottaging at night, but that's a different thing. So there you go, that's how the cheese breakfast fast food industry works, just so you know.
Hi, I'm a mouse, and I like cheese, but I don't believe in the conspiracies. The other mice say that the cheese has a trap, and I don't believe that.
Well, I'm a big giant from the Fionn McCool stories, and I set the traps, so you better believe it. The Illuminati are real.
The Illuminati aren't real. They're just guys going around with loads of money, doing what they want to do, when they want to do it. I suppose next you're going to tell me that 9/11 was an inside job as well.
How little you know, little one. Go to conspiracast.com for more.
Conspiracast.com? That sounds good. Conspiracast.com? That's brilliant. Conspiracast.com, really? I better go eat my cheese.
Just remembered what those jumpers were called. They're called Aran sweaters. That's what they're called. Aran sweaters. They're white, old-fashioned, oilandy type woolly jumpers. They keep you very warm. They're called Aran sweaters, named after the Aran Islands. Now, I'm not sure what Aran means, but Aran would be an Irish word, and I presume it's taken from the Irish word Aran, which is the Irish for bread. So basically, it's the Bread Islands. Now, that would make sense, because there's another set of islands called the Blasket Islands, which I assume is a mispronunciation of basket. Presumably, some foreigners came in and took over Ireland for a couple of centuries accidentally mistranslated it to Blasket, not Basket. So if you have the Basket Islands and the Bread Islands next door to each other, that makes sense. In fact, I hadn't realised that before. So the Aran Islands is actually named after bread. We love our bread over here. We used to like potatoes, but there was a problem there back in the 1800s. I'm not sure if you're aware, we ran out of potatoes at one stage. Our entire potato crop got diseased, and we just had to switch to bread. It took us a couple of years. We had to wait till all the dead potatoes are being removed from the fields, and then plant all the, that stuff that you use to grow to make bread. So we made bread. Now I'm just going to check this Aran Islands thing and make sure I've got it right, because I don't want to sound like an idiot when I'm talking about my own country and my own language. So Aran Islands, here we go. Aran Islands, Irish, Illin, Ilon Aron. Oh, it's slightly different because there's a. In bread, in the Irish for bread, Aron, there's a father over the second A, and but in this one here, there's a father over the first A, which means it's Aran, not Aran, which apparently makes a big difference. And so we'll have a look in the Wikipedia here thing for it. The Wikipedia thing here for it. I'm a little confused because. My wife just shouted, "Is the internet on?" And in fact, it is. That's what I'm using to get this information. I'm using the internet. Unfortunately, I don't have a copy of the internet on my computer, so I had to download it. And this caused a problem. It interfered with some program that's on the television. Our internet interferes with programs on the television. There's a fine program on at the moment. It's about dancing. It's called So You Think You Can Dance. And I'm dazzled by that program. I'm so dazzled I have to walk away from the television and work on my podcast whenever it comes on. The same as America's Next Top Model. That program is so dazzling that I sometimes even have to leave the room and get my portable voice recorder and start talking to you. I know I don't always mention this, but that's the case. I'm afraid of some of these television programs, and that's why you get an extra podcast here and there every now and then. Aran Islands, Aran Islands, Ilon Aron, as opposed to Ilon Aron, which is what I thought it was. And now I see there's an extra A as well, so I suppose that makes a difference. There's an extra N, and the stress is on the first A rather than the second A. But apart from that, I was right. I got slightly mixed up with the Irish for bread, which is a little different. It doesn't say what this word Aran means, though, so I don't know. What does Aran mean? I should just make something up. I don't want to make something up, though. I want to look up and find out what it means. But I'd have to put the internet back on for that. I don't want to disrupt the dance competition programming that's dazzling our Saturday afternoon, so I won't. You just have to wait. Anyway, I see at the top of this Wikipedia page, it says, "This article needs additional citation or verification." And that means, basically, it's crap. This is why I don't intentionally go to Wikipedia. It's just that when I look this stuff up, the first result sometimes is Wikipedia. I would never intentionally go to Wikipedia and go and ask the Wikipedia website to tell me some information about something important. I never dream of that. But apparently Google feels that it's okay to direct me to Wikipedia sometimes when I ask it a question. So presumably Google has checked up on these particular pages that it's sending me to and has decided that they are as trustworthy as you're going to get. It's not Google's fault. They don't make the internet. They just own it. They're just basically the telephone book of the internet. They're like the yellow pages. Except they're white, because apparently yellow uses a lot of electricity or something. There's actually someone made a version of Google that's got a black background, and it's supposed to save electricity because, something to do with the monitor. I'm not making this up. There's a black-paged version of Google. The problem is that all the text on Google is black as well, so if you have black text on a black background, you're not going to be able to see it. It's basically going to look like there's no text at all. So someone's going to have to go along with some sort of a touchscreen pen and basically trace over all the black text with a white touchscreen pen, like some sort of a stylus. And that's going to take a long time, especially if they do that. You might have to do it live, because chances are you're going to be searching for something that hasn't been searched for before, so they're not going to have it ready if you're the only person who's ever searched for it. So they're going to have to, you're going to have to wait, and there's a little sand timer thing, an egg timer thing will come up and say, "Please wait while someone goes over the black text with a white stylus so that you can see it against the black background." Don't worry, it's all going to save energy for you in the long run. It's for the environment. It's just like green tea. We're the green version of Google. We're basically the green internet. And don't worry, we're not wasting ink. A stylus doesn't use ink. It just uses light. Uses light to track something along the screen. I don't know how a stylus works. Maybe it scratches the screen, or transmits electrons, or collects electrons, or maybe it recycles electrons and makes some extra ones. So maybe it's extra productive in that way. It's like one of those websites that you go to that wants you to work out the size of the universe using your spare memory capacity on your computer. You'd use your spare processing power to run this little program in the background that's apparently calculating how many cats you could fit into the entire universe. It's taken years and years, and has loads of people participating, but it's all in the interest of science and the advancement of man and cat and computers that we do this. And I'm happy to take part in a thing like that if we ever come across it. Mass programming. It's basically my equivalent of giving to charity. In fact, I don't give to charity, I just do this instead. I participate in these scientific programs. I allow part of my computer to be taken over by these programs. And this is probably why we're all going to end up the way they ended up in the Terminator movies. Robots are going to take over the world. This is how it all starts. But we're all blind to it. We're too busy looking up whether an island is named after bread. Which it turns out it isn't. But there you go. It's not my fault. Well, it's partially my fault, but it's no more my fault than it is yours. I mean, there's 10 billion of us on the planet now, so it's only 1 billionth my fault, or less. I think I'm slightly less than average responsibility for this stuff, because at least I'm aware of it, because I'm talking about it at the moment. So I take maybe 120 billionth of the blame, and you can take whatever blame you think is appropriate to you. So, you can't blame me for the whole bloody thing. I'm only slightly to blame. 120 billionth is a tiny fraction. So basically, I've done nothing wrong. Nobody else has either. There's probably a few people going around who are one 10 millionth responsible. But even that's minuscule. So you wonder why. No wonder people don't go to church anymore. They don't feel guilty about anything because there's too many people to spread the blame between. And it becomes minute when you spread it around that many people. So basically, the human race is okay. That's what I'm trying to say.
If you would like to comment on any of the issues raised in today's program, visit the Stalkers Forum guestbook
and online voicemail system
at our website, intoyourhead.com, or email us at studio@intoyourhead.com. Remember, we value the opinions of you, the humble and ignorant listener.